Chapter 5. Lin Ji Chan. Dispose of all knowledge. Chan learners need to have a clear idea of dhyana, and especially the dhyana or Chan as stipulated in the Chan school. The Chinese Chan school is related to the transmission of Buddhism from India, but it is more of an innovation in itself. It is the actualization of Buddhist thought in everyday life. It is not a theory, nor is it a way of thinking. Chan is everything there is to life, the entirety of what it takes to be a human being. This is the major characteristic of Chan. Chan is alive and sprightly. It cannot be deduced through logic, nor can it be structured through rationality. As far as the dhyana of the Chan school is concerned, all logic, deduction, and theorization become obsolete. That is why we say that there is nothing like Chan, for its most distinctive manifestation is to allow every living being to develop its individuality and potential for self-awakening. It is significant of Chan to fully develop one's nature of subjective capability, relying on no other person but one's own power to find liberation. Chan advocates that it is only after having developed one's individual power that changes can be made to create one's destiny. Chan looks upon all words and texts, Buddhist texts included, as a hindrance to the development of the true individual spirit of the subject being. We need only look at the Chan quotations from late Tang to the Five Dynasties and Northern Song, or carefully digest the records on Jingdi transmission of the lamp, and we can find the strong emphasis of the Chan school on the individual spirit. The reason for apparently rebuking the Buddha and snubbing the patriarchs is to denounce attachment to words and texts, which are considered by Chan to be a nuisance, an impediment to the development of the individual spirit. It is believed that only when Buddhist or Dharma views are completely disposed of, that the spirit of the individual could blossom, and hence the possibility of becoming one's own master. Such outstanding thoughts were thoroughly revealed by the Lin Ji Chan masters of late Tang. Although there are not many recorded quotations of Lin Ji Chan masters, yet all of them ranted heavily against the doctrinal teachings. This is for the purpose of exposing one's original likeness and reviving one's intrinsic nature that does not discriminate. Hence, the reprimanding of all kinds of attachment and the disposal of all knowledge and perception. Chan Master Lin Ji attained accomplishment in the South, but instead of staying there to propagate the Dharma, he headed north to Zanding in Hebei. It is recorded in the compendium of his quotations that there was a dilapidated monastery called Linji Monastery, which was first established in Eastern Hui. The Chan master chose to settle there, but war soon broke out and the monastery was burnt down. Thereafter, an army general offered Master Linji one of his residences for renovation to become the new Linji Monastery that still stands today. The original monastery was by the side of River Hutuo, which is quite a long distance away from its present location. The true person of no position. Most frequently mentioned in the compendium of Linji quotations is the true person of no position. Graphically speaking, each of us has a true person within, as opposed to the elusive being that we see moving about in action. This true person cannot be seen or touched, but it is always there with us. It can be approached or be in union with us, but it cannot be located, hence the true person of no position. Chan Master Linji would often say in his discourse, "There's a true person with no position who is radiating effulgence and shaking the earth right in front of you." This is to say that the true person of no position is functioning at every moment, manifesting in our every volition, thought, word, and action. If we want to find another term to substitute, we can call it Buddha nature. According to Buddhist doctrinal teachings, we would have to shed off many layers of our nature as an ordinary sentient being before we can see our Buddha nature. For Chan Master Linji, however, he started off without discriminating the one nature from the other to make it two. Instead, he took Buddha nature as the nature of sentient beings and the true person of no position as the ordinary person. For him, there is no Buddha apart from sentient beings. Where are Buddhas if there are no sentient beings? This is his very direct approach in revealing the source of our existence. There is constant reference to the Buddha of intrinsic nature in the Platform Sutra, and Chan Master Linji was only trying to substantiate it by calling it the true person with no position. The true in the here and now. Chan Master Linji had another idea which he expressed as everywhere being the master, but true only where it stands. Here, where it stands, is meant the present moment. In other words, apart from the present moment, there is no truth. The truth is in the here and now. It is substantial and not abstract. The truth, or Buddha nature, is never apart from us, although we cannot see or hear it. Even though it is right there with us, we do not know it is there, nor do we know it is in function. We are using it every moment, yet we do not know what it is. This is our delusion. That is why Chan advocates directly points to the mind. Seeing intrinsic nature is Buddhahood accomplished. Going straight for the mind is to directly point out the Buddha within you in the here and now. Once you acknowledge it, your life is uplifted. You would request of yourself what you expect of a Buddha, and you would embrace the mind of a Buddha to transform your own mind of a sentient being. Directly points means to be unbiased and right on target, sharp as a needle's prick that instantly bleeds. The aim of directly targeting the mind is to see one's intrinsic nature and accomplish Buddhahood. So, what is intrinsic nature and what is mind? Mind is intrinsic nature and intrinsic nature is mind. Apart from mind, there is no intrinsic nature, and apart from intrinsic nature, there is no mind. If you understand this, you are instantly a Buddha. Accomplishment of Buddhahood can be that easy. You are at once there in the land of ultimate bliss. But at the same time, it can also be very difficult to accomplish Buddhahood if you cannot fathom its profundity and immensity. The axiom of the true in the here and now is most thorough in its implication. It spells out the signature of Chan. Almost all of the ancient patriarchs' quotations are expositions on this. It is also the basis upon which Chan patriarchs set their criteria for validation of a Chan practitioner's attainment. True light shine forth beyond infinite space. However, this is far from the end. After accomplishment of Buddhahood in the here and now, one needs to have it maintained and perpetuated. How is this done? Chan Master Kaoshan Benji of the Kardong sect compared it to passing by a village infested with poisonous bacteria. Not a single drop of water is to be touched. This shows how much more serious one must continue to cultivate after accomplishment of Buddhahood. Definitely far more stringent than observance of the 250 precepts. In short, the three learnings of moral discipline, meditative concentration, and prajna wisdom must be cultivated to full accomplishment. A patriarch was once asked how to develop moral discipline, meditative concentration, and prajna wisdom. The patriarch replied, I have no such idle furniture here. This does not imply that the patriarch was playing down the importance of the three learnings. It is indicative that his way of cultivation was not in the order of three stages. His was all the three within one moment of mind, which is the more direct approach that gets right down to the core. With respect to the importance of continuing with cultivation after enlightenment, there is a gatha by Chan Master Lin Ji. A lot of people might have read it, but they may not have realized its understanding message. What shall we do with the incessant flow? Let true light shine forth beyond infinite space. It's not easy to grasp what is without name and form. Let's sharpen the blade now, the feather is gone. The incessant flow refers to the very subtle thoughts that keep rising and falling within the subconscious mind. To handle this continuous flow of thoughts, we actually need to face it with utter wisdom. Casting the light of true wisdom on it, right down to its finest detail for contemplation and insight. As for our intrinsic nature, it is basically free from name and form, hence difficult to grasp. Yet, it is at this point that we must devote further effort to cultivate, like sharpening an already sharp sword that has just slit a feather blown onto its blade. The sharp sword is compared to wisdom, which must be employed to sever without fail the tiniest of thought the moment it arises. To sharpen an already sharp sword is an analogy of the necessity to be constantly aware that even after enlightenment, we must carry on with our cultivation in the practice. This is the way to have our state of enlightenment preserved and perpetuated.